It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Glad you could join us. President Trump signed an executive order last week restricting legal immigration for 60 days, saying that it will protect American workers hit hard by the pandemic. So we're looking more closely at what this means for certain categories of immigrants. Do you support or oppose the suspension of new green cards? Are you a mixed status family? What has your situation been since the coronavirus reached America? Do you work in a food processing plant? What can you share about recent outbreaks? We're at 800-642-1234. Caitlin Dickerson is a national immigration reporter for The New York Times. Caitlin, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So you've been reporting on mixed status families and their options for economic relief during this pandemic. What are you finding out?
I'm finding out that in the first stimulus package negotiated by Congress, tucked in there is a provision that a lot of people, a lot of American citizens didn't notice in the beginning, which says that not only are there undocumented spouses for American citizens who are married to undocumented immigrants, not only are there undocumented spouses not eligible for relief, which is not terribly surprising given the political climate at the moment, but also the American citizens they're married to can't get relief. So anybody who filed taxes in the past with an individual who used an individual taxpayer ID number, that's a common substitute for a Social Security number that's most often used by undocumented immigrants. It makes them really easy to find for the IRS. Anyone who filed joint family returns with someone with one of those ITIN numbers, they also cannot get relief from the stimulus package. And for a lot of families, that's compounding, you know, of course, the sudden job loss that we've all been talking about so much, but also, as you know, when you have a two-income household, one person is undocumented and they've lost their job, that person is not eligible for unemployment insurance, of course, because they're here without legal status. They're also not eligible for the federally funded coronavirus testing or treatment because they're here without legal status, and they're not going to get the cash, infusion of cash from the federal government, $1,200 up to for eligible adults, and $500 bonuses for kids, and not only that, but their spouses are not going to get the funding either. And so experts are saying, immigration analysts are saying, that this could affect up to a million American households and American citizens.
So that stimulus package, then therefore it compromises the whole household, both people who are here documented and who are not, you know, undocumented alike. So basically that whole household is compromised.
Absolutely. So I have a story publishing reader today. In fact, I'll just give you one example. A family who lives in a low-income suburb outside of Austin, Texas, mother and father and four children. The father was born in California, American citizen. The mother was born in Mexico. They've got four U.S. citizen kids and also a granddaughter living with them. But because of that one undocumented member of the family, their mother, that family is not eligible for any stimulus money. Whereas if both parents had been U.S. citizens, they would have gotten more than $4,000 to help them cover their bills. And you know, I don't have to explain to you that $4,000 is a lot of money right now when people are dealing with much less, if any, income at all, and trying to stay on top of their expenses.
We're talking with Caitlin Dickerson, the national immigration reporter for The New York Times, and she's been covering the coronavirus impact on immigrant communities. What questions do you have about immigration policies right now? Do you support or oppose closing our southern and northern borders to non-residents during this pandemic? What about refugee admissions? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Caitlin, here in Wisconsin and across the country, we're seeing outbreaks in meat processing plants. Why are these plants hotspots?
They're primarily hotspots because in meat processing plants, I mean, picture these facilities, they're huge. They're often multiple stories high, and you've got thousands of workers there at a single time. And they're processing, whether it's beef or pork or chicken, massive chunks of meat that are sort of zooming by them on conveyor belts, and you've got individual people standing side by side. Often people talk about how their shoulders are touching, or if not, the person next to them is at least close enough that they can reach out and touch them. And, you know, they're chopping the meat, they're deboning the meat, they're processing and packaging the meat. in order to be shared and shipped across the world. And they're doing it just in very close proximity. Same thing is true for the break rooms, places where people rest and in between shifts or where they have meals. So when you have a lot of people in one very small, tight, compressed area, you know, based on what we know about social distancing and how essential that is to prevent the coronavirus from spreading, it's really not surprising that we're seeing these very large outbreaks that originate in plants.
And you reported on the Smithfield pork plant in South Dakota. How has the situation developed there, and what is the status?
Well, the cases, the toll of cases associated with the Smithfield plant in Sioux Falls continue to rise. You know, last I checked, it was over 900 cases, but it must have gone up significantly over the weekend, to be honest. So, as you know, it was designated by the CDC as the largest single source outbreak in the entire country. Again, just because there are 3,700 workers in that one facility, and it churns 24/7. And people are there. They spend a lot of time there. So, it's not as if you're a couple days on, a couple days off. A lot of workers there typically spend 6 or even 7 days a week. They're all still at home because Smithfield shut that plant down. And a lot of them are struggling not only because they or their family members have the coronavirus, but because they're so used to working extra hours, you know, double shifts, 10, 11, 12 hours a day to make extra money to pay their bills, that the 40 hours of paid sick leave, which sounds great, that Smithfield is providing each week to those workers, for some people, that's only half of what they're used to making and what they need to cover their bills. So it's very much still a tough situation in Sioux Falls.
Let's look at the green card situation. Last week, President Trump announced to temporarily stop issuing new green cards. How is this impacting immigrants here in the U.S.?
So the green card ban actually is much more limited than was originally advertised in the little less than 24 hours between when President Trump first announced on Twitter he was going to temporarily ban immigration and when he actually signed an executive order. The administration's plans for limiting immigration into the U.S. scaled back significantly. So what we have in place now is actually a pause that applies to people who are looking for green cards outside the United States. People inside the United States aren't impacted by this 60-day pause. And there are even exceptions for who it affects among people who are outside the United States. For example, spouses and children of American citizens are exempt. Medical workers are exempt. Any kind of frontline worker who might be able to help with a coronavirus response is exempt. But at the same time, the administration has also made clear that they plan to expand from where we are now. And if we go back to what the president originally had in mind, that was a ban on all green cards and all employment-based visa applications. So that would have a much larger impact. And the question now is, are they going to continue with those plans? Are they going to leave this limited pause in place and see what kind of effect it has?
Do you anticipate a timeline for next steps here? Do you have any indications?
Well, with the particular pause that we have in place now, the administration has laid out a 60-day time period after which the president said he's going to assess the economic situation in the country and decide whether he wants to extend the ban. Because remember, the reason he put forth for establishing this temporary pause on the green card processing was to preserve jobs for the millions, tens of millions of Americans who are out of work now because of the coronavirus pandemic and who desperately need to get back to work. That was the idea. So he's going to take a look at after 60 days and make a decision. When it comes to these other expanded policy ideas that are floating around the White House and that may or may not be introduced, I wish I had a crystal ball and could give you a timeline. Well, the president's Twitter tends to be the best indicator.
We have New York Times national immigration reporter Caitlin Dickerson. We'll be back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about recent steps by the Trump administration with immigration. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. According to the Migration Policy Institute, 6 million immigrant workers are at the front lines of keeping U.S. residents healthy and fed during the COVID-19 pandemic. Are you concerned about how immigration restrictions could impact your business or specific industries like dairy? Are you an international student? How did campus closures affect your education? Be part of this at 800-642-1234. And we're talking with national immigration reporter Caitlin Dickerson from the New York Times. Let's take a call now. Lou is joining us from Cudahy. Hi, Lou.
Good morning. For the U.S. government to give money to these illegal aliens who are committing fraud would be an approval of the government by their criminal conduct. And the United States has a right to determine who gets into our country. There is no right to come into America. And no doubt the grievance industrial complex will be on all the talk shows in the next 24 hours.
Well, Lou, let's get Caitlin to respond here that we don't owe people who are in the country illegally, as Lou says, anything, any type of support system.
I think, Lou, that what we were discussing earlier on the show is the idea that American citizens who are married to immigrants without legal status aren't eligible for the federal stimulus funds. And certainly there's a long history of limiting cash assistance and federal assistance from people who broke the law to come to the United States. I think the concern that's being put out there by health experts and advocacy groups is that when you withhold that kind of support, especially for testing and treatment for the coronavirus, for example, you know, people who live here without legal status, they live here without legal status, they're going to be here regardless. And if they can't get testing or treatment, that has an impact on the health of the broader public. But certainly the restriction of cash assistance and other kind of financial supports, there's a long history of holding that back from people without legal status. I think it's the American citizens who are associated with those immigrants who are sort of surprised to learn that they also would not be able to get any help for their losses.
I was looking at this statistic from the Migration Policy Institute that nearly 30% of physicians, 40% of health aides in the U.S. were born outside the country. When you look at statistics like that, could that impact our labor force as we go forward with this pandemic?
It certainly could. I mean, you see in almost every industry a very significant representation of immigrant workers, right? I mean, the numbers are really staggering. And I think that's the challenge that we're grappling with right now as a country is how to responsibly distribute support and aid while also keeping a hold on law and order, if you will. And you kind of see a couple different things happening at once. So at the same time that so many undocumented workers who work in fields picking crops, who work in the meat plants that we've been discussing, have been deemed essential by the federal government and have actually been given paperwork by their employers that amounts to more or less almost kind of freedom papers that can be presented to a police officer. If you're pulled over on your way to work, you can hand the police officer this document saying, I'm an essential workforce member responding to the coronavirus pandemic, and I need to go to work, and I'm allowed to move around despite travel restrictions that are in place. You know, people are being handed those documents, which give them a sense of security they haven't had in a very long time. But at the same time, without access to some of the supports, may be more vulnerable to health issues and also to financial devastation that could have a ripple effect for American citizens, the rest of the country as well.
Talking with Caitlin Dickerson, national immigration reporter for the New York Times. She's bringing us up to speed on the Trump administration's recent immigration policy and changes stemming from the pandemic. Let's take another call now. Owen is with us from Wyawega. Hi, Owen.
Morning, Kate. So here on the dairy farm, we really need to examine the policies that have been instituted and are continuing to be implemented now, which is a disenfranchised labor force who is not in any way given any type of legal repercussions to coming into the country and working on farms, but in turn, they receive no benefits of being full-time citizens here in this country. So this policy, I think, is designed to continue to make a very sharply contrasted divide in our society from legal and democratic people that can be able to participate in democracy and people who can't. That's disenfranchised labor on our farms and our industries in the country.
Owen, thanks for the call. Caitlin, Owen works on a dairy farm alongside migrant workers at the dairy. What do you see there with disenfranchisement?
I think, Owen, you bring up a really good point that we have clearly a cycle of very large numbers of people coming to the United States illegally each year to work on dairy farms, to work picking crops, and to work even in meat processing. And in a lot of cases, they don't have benefits. They're not able to go to the doctor when they need to. They're not able to stay home sick. And yet it's this cycle that keeps repeating continuously. I think a big part of that is that for administrations now, Congress has failed to address comprehensive immigration reform. There's been this huge question hanging over Congress for three administrations about what to do with the undocumented workforce in the United States, and nothing has changed. And you even see provisions being made to sort of protect the system that you have in place now that does end up leaving a lot of workers vulnerable. So in almost every policy we've introduced that had the potential to impact undocumented workers who work in food, you see exceptions written in for them. And the Trump administration is no exception. They do that frequently. As I said, the Trump administration designated agricultural workers as essential, knowing that the vast majority in some states, more than 90% of those workers are undocumented. And those workers were also exempt from the visa processing and the green card processing pause that is in place now. So, you know, it's a longstanding issue, but it's also one that this administration clearly understands because you see them writing provisions to protect the system that you're describing.
Caitlin, let's move our focus now to the international students on college campuses across the U.S. What impact have you seen there?
The impact has been very significant for international students. More than 1 million people come to the United States and are here studying from other countries. And for those who were living on college campuses, when those places were closed down, they had nowhere to go. So what I did was interview international students from across the country who tend to pay much more money in tuition and really support a lot of our country's academic institutions, and who were couch surfing in the middle of a pandemic and who were feeling very uncomfortable and very unstable, you know, unsure of where to go and whether to impose on American families and for how long. At the same time, you know, those who had the option to go home, a lot don't, right? Because of travel restrictions, a lot really would not be allowed back into their country right now without a huge amount of diplomatic effort. Those who could go home, though, they're worried about getting stuck. And, you know, I think that a lot of people have the idea of an international student in their mind as somebody who's incredibly wealthy, but that's not the case for a lot of international students, right? Of course, the United States is a place where the international elite love to send their kids to be educated. But I interviewed kids whose parents made, you know, $7,000 a year, one family in Tanzania, a girl from Russia whose parents had sold an apartment and sold a car in order to fund her education, a young woman from Brazil who had a single mother who was trying to support her and skimping on groceries and skimping on discretionary spending to try to pay for her education. So for a lot of international students that really aren't sure how to proceed with their education right now, you know, they're facing the possibility of having to give up after major, major sacrifices that their families made to get them here.
How have campuses or how has the U.S. government offered support in any way?
You see a wide range of support from college campuses, and I think that a trend may be catching on, starting with NYU, which has more international students than any other campus in the country. They've got a fund to try to help and provide grants to international students, and some other campuses may do the same thing. Some students on some campuses are raising money to try to help each other, but there is no federal help for international students. I guess we're sort of identifying a trend here, right? But the billions of dollars that were allotted in a stimulus package specifically to help American college students cover their expenses if they were displaced by the coronavirus, you know, pay tuition, rent, housing, food, those provisions are not being extended, not only to undocumented students, you know, people who are in the DACA program, but they also are not going to be available for international students who are in the United States legally here on student visas.
Caitlin, thank you for taking the time. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Caitlin Dickerson is a national immigration reporter for The New York Times. Coming up, we talk with the incoming Milwaukee County Executive. David Crawley is here talking about his plans to address the coronavirus pandemic in the state's biggest county. That conversation with County Executive-elect David Crawley is coming up right after this news update here on the Ideas Network.